Good day. This is Ozarks at Large for Monday, June 17th, 2013. I'm Christina Thomas. Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle. The 23rd Annual Riverfront Blues Festival will be held June 21st and 22nd at Harry E. Kelly Park in Fort Smith. Performing artists include Johnny Winter, Eric Sardinas, Leah and the Mojo Doctors, and more. Show begins Friday at 6 and Saturday at 5. Tickets and more information available at riverfrontbluesfest.org. Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, a recent poll by the Diane D. Blair Center for Southern Politics and Society shows that the opinions of people of similar backgrounds aren't all that similar. Plus, how carpenter bees get into your house, it isn't with a tiny hammer, and a preview of this week's LPGA tournament in Rogers. But first, a West Arkansas company is expanding and creating new jobs. Roby Brock with Talk Business Arkansas has details.
The new $1.7 million call center expansion looks like it could add about 90 jobs within the next 3 years. This is particularly good news for Fort Smith area. It has been hit hard by manufacturing layoffs in recent years. Since March 21st, this is the sixth announced economic development project in the Fort Smith metropolitan area, and a lot of those job replacements have been in the service sector, which maybe pay a little bit better and might have a little bit more long-term potential. So this is some good news for Fort Smith, which could definitely use it.
The company, Answer Fort Smith, has just completed the renovation of a building that had once housed a grocery store. The 35,000-square-foot facility will house the new call center. The company has provided telephone answering services for area businesses for the last 30 years. Gas prices in Arkansas have risen just under 2 cents over the past week, averaging out to $3.36 per gallon. That's according to a daily survey of more than 1,800 Arkansas gas stations by GasBuddy.com, a website that tracks the price of gasoline across the country. While prices yesterday were nearly 17 cents per gallon higher than 1 year ago, the price of gas is still about 5 cents per gallon lower than it was 1 month ago. Meanwhile, the national average price of a gallon has fallen 2 cents in the past week to $3.61, a decrease of 5 cents per gallon during the last month and an increase of 8 cents per gallon over the past year. Late last week, Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Mike Ross and Lieutenant Governor candidate John Burkhalter mutually endorsed each other and stated plans to work jointly to create more jobs in Arkansas, if elected. According to Talk Business Arkansas, during the dual endorsement, Ross announced that he would create a governor's cabinet for economic development, a statewide effort potentially including Burkhalter as cabinet chair, as well as representatives from the state's Economic Development Commission and departments of Parks and Tourism, Science and Technology Authority, Finance Authority, Workforce Services, Education, Career Education, and Higher Education. Following the announcement, Diane Curry, Burkhalter's challenger in the Democratic primary, said that she feels better than ever about her campaign and that voters around Arkansas have repeatedly rejected backroom deals that exclude others and divide our party in our state. Curry refused to endorse anyone for governor at this time, opting instead to let the people of Arkansas decide. Arkansas Governor Mike Beebe says that this summer will help determine the outcome of the state's fight against childhood hunger. In his weekly radio address, Beebe says that Arkansas is building a feeding system to address the issue, and notable progress has been made.
On an average day last summer, approximately 37,000 low-income children received summer meals. This was a noteworthy increase of 16% compared to the previous summer. This growth dwarfed the national average, which was only 0.5%. As a result, Arkansas moved up 9 spots in the national rankings for summer meal participation and now ranks 18th. Still, the number of children we fed last summer represents only a fraction of the children who receive school lunch during the rest of the year.
According to data from the national nonprofit Feeding America, more than 200,000 Arkansas children live in food insecure households. Governor Beebe says that summer feeding programs, like ones offered by the State Department of Education and by the Department of Human Services, food assistance programs stretch throughout 65 of Arkansas's 75 counties. For more information, visit nokidhungry.org. Funeral services for George Denny, a professor of educational statistics and research methods at the University of Arkansas, will be held at 2:30 tomorrow afternoon at First United Presbyterian Church in Fayetteville, while burial will take place earlier in the day at 11 o'clock at Fairview Memorial Gardens. Denny died last Thursday. His family has established a scholarship fund in his memory. The George S. Denny Memorial Scholarship Fund can be accessed online at onlinegiving.uark.edu. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals went par for the field over the weekend, winning 2-for-4 of the weekend's games. After losing to the Springfield Cardinals 8-4 Friday, the Naturals again lost the first of two against the Cardinals on Saturday, but the Nats came back to win the second game in a doubleheader 6-1. The win over Springfield was joined by another win yesterday when the Naturals opened a four-game road series against the Travelers. The final score was 3-2. The series against the Travelers continues this evening in Little Rock. One of the heads of the Diamond Hogs is moving on. Associate coach Todd Butler has accepted the position as the head of the Wichita State Shockers baseball program. In a statement issued yesterday afternoon, head hog Dave Van Horn offered his congratulations to Butler on his new job, saying that Todd was a valuable member of our coaching staff for the last 8 years, helping to keep our program among the nation's elite, and is deserving of this opportunity to advance his coaching career. Van Horn went on to say that he has no doubt that Butler will be successful as head coach of Wichita State. Mostly cloudy this evening with a 40% chance of showers in northwest Arkansas, a 50% chance for showers in the Arkansas River Valley. Overnight lows from 62 to 69. Partly sunny tomorrow, Tuesday, with a slight chance of showers in northwest Arkansas, a 40% chance in the Arkansas River Valley. Highs in the low to mid 80s. Mostly cloudy Tuesday evening with a low of 62 in northwest Arkansas, 68 with a slight chance of showers in the Arkansas River Valley. This is Ozarks at Large. Lots of business and political news around Arkansas last week. A new economic report was released. A lawsuit was filed. Plus, a partnership between two-year and four-year schools. And a ballot initiative got a green light. Roby Brock from our content partner, Talk Business Arkansas, has more.
With the exception of Fort Smith, five of the six metropolitan areas covered in the Little Rock zone of the Federal Reserve St. Louis District showed improvement or flatline stability in the first quarter of 2013, according to the Fed's new Burgundy Book. The Arkansas economy performed about as well as the U.S. economy in the first quarter, the report noted. Arkansas Attorney General Dustin McDaniel and U.S. Attorney Chris Thayer are filing a joint lawsuit against ExxonMobil Pipeline Company and Mobile Pipeline Company for violations of state and federal environmental laws related to the May 29th Pegasus pipeline rupture in Mayflower. The complaint outlines six causes of action against the defendants related to the oil spill, which dumped heavy crude oil into waterways and a neighborhood near Lake Conway. A new partnership will award associate's degrees to Arkansas students who complete the required number of hours after transferring from two-year to four-year schools. Credit when it's due. The program was announced during a news conference Wednesday by Shane Broadway, interim director of the Arkansas Department of Higher Education, and Dr. Ed Franklin, president of the Arkansas Association of Two-Year Colleges. In Arkansas, 45% of students transferring from two-year to four-year schools complete 60 degree eligible hours but never finish college. Those transfer students currently have nothing more than a high school diploma to show for their efforts. An associate's degree makes them more employable. Voters may get a chance to decide whether or not to keep the private option plan approved by state lawmakers and signed into law by Governor Mike Beebe. Tea Party activist Glenn Gallus and his organization Arkansans Against Big Government have received approval from Attorney General Dustin McDaniel to move forward with a ballot referendum on the Health Care Independence Act of 2013. Arkansans Against Big Government must collect nearly 47,000 signatures to qualify for the 2014 general election ballot. A vote for the measure would approve and maintain the act, while a vote against the measure would repeal it. The private option approved by lawmakers allows federal Medicaid dollars to be steered into a forthcoming health insurance exchange, which is under implementation in Arkansas. The U.S. Senate approved a five-year farm bill by a 66-27 vote, with U.S. Senators Mark Pryor and John Bozeman voting for the legislation. that would cut $4 billion over 10 years from the food stamp program. The Agriculture Reform, Food, and Jobs Act of 2013 is the Senate's idea for what should replace the existing farm bill set to expire September 30th. The House is considering a different measure. Longtime Little Rock banker George Worthen died at the age of 71 this past week. Worthen came from a lineage of prominent bankers in the renowned Worthen family. He was most recently the president of Bank of Little Rock. And in politics, Little Rock businessman and Arkansas Highway Commissioner John Burkhalter and Little Rock School Board President Diane Curry both said Tuesday they would vie for the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor. Current Lieutenant Governor Mark Darr could seek a second term next year, but he's hinted that he may run for Congress if a current House member challenges Senator Mark Pryor. I'm Roby Brock, and that is your Talk Business Arkansas update.
Support for Talk Business Arkansas and Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse, professional experience to clients across the United States. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. The conversation about immigration reform continues to be a major topic of conversation in Washington, especially after a major piece of legislation revising the country's immigration regulations was introduced earlier this year. A recent poll conducted by the Diane D. Blair Center of Southern Politics and Society in the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences and University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service examined opinions about immigration reform. The big takeaway from the poll is that no community is monolithic. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellum spoke with Rafael Jimeno. He's the Diane Blair Professor of Latino Studies. Kyle began by pointing out that similar people don't necessarily have similar opinions.
Well, and there is that story that can be told. You have this notion of 56% of Latinos, right? When you group them all together, 56% of them are against tougher immigration laws. And so that's how pundits, that's how many academics, that's how politicians get away with grouping them all together. But it's really interesting when you divide them up based on any number of characteristics in the report. You know, I do this with nativity, but you could theoretically do it with any characteristic you wanted. And when you do this, right, you do see these differences that are significant for a lot of the predictions people make about elections.
There's a strong majority that don't want strict regulations, but native-born Latinos or Latinos born in the United States are much more likely to want what we would call stronger laws.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not a majority of the group, but it's a significant chunk compared to those same people in the foreign-born group, right? And so that tells you something. I mean, we tend to think that all Latinos will be equally affected by issues of immigration, and we already know that there's a huge difference, for example, between Mexican-Americans and Puerto Ricans, right? Puerto Ricans don't have to care about immigration. They're American citizens by birth. They're not immigrants, right? They're just – it's like moving from a territory to a state, from state to state. And so immigration is not a big deal to them. Same thing when you start talking about a Latino born in the U.S. There's a chance that they might have a cousin or a family member or a friend who is an immigrant, but the further on you get in generational status, right, the less likely it is that they have any connection to the immigrant experience. And at that point, they're just Americans who are as concerned as any other American in general about border security and all the other issues that we tend to group with immigration.
This poll was across all ethnicities. It wasn't just of Latinos.
No, it's part of this ongoing effort in the Blair Center to produce nationally representative data that can tell us something not only about the South as a region, but about the South in the greater national context. And so we like to think of it as 6 surveys in one. You have a nationally representative sample of whites, Southern and non-Southern, Latinos, Southern and non-Southern, and blacks, Southern and non-Southern. And so we can say things with confidence about each of these groups. But then, of course, we also can adjust the data, weight it correctly so that we can speak to national level trends and not just about what's going on in these subgroups, these subpopulations.
One figure that comes from this report is that nationally, across all ethnicities, just over 52% of the survey's respondents would prefer tougher immigration laws. That's 50-50, basically. I mean, yeah. I'm rounding, but I mean...
Yeah, I mean, it is a slim majority of the American public that could be said to favor tougher laws. But you're right. I mean, saying a slim majority makes it sound like, well, it's a majority and there you go. But, I mean, a lot of this, you know, responds to the way politicians frame the issue, to the way the media frames the issue, and the fact that in spite of all of this attention, in spite of all of this controversy and you know, all this opposition from some very vocal members, for example, of the Republican Party, the fact that you would still just have 52%, you know, tells you something too, I think. It's not so much that people want a crackdown. It's just that they want the system of laws to make sense, and they want those laws to be easy to follow so that people will actually follow them. But yeah, this notion of being punitive is really not as widely favored as people think.
You know, going back to the difference right after last November's election, pundits both from the left and the right were talking about the Latino vote and what the Republican Party would have to do or what the Democratic Party can do to... And what you find out here is there's no easy answer because there's no, quote, Latino vote.
Well, yes and no.
Okay.
I mean, I would say that the reason that the Republican Party cannot just ignore, you know, the Latino population. I mean, there have been calls for this. I mean, you have Representative Steve King from Iowa, I think, who has said the GOP should just forget about Latinos. You've had pundits like Pat Buchanan, calling for a type of Southern strategy against Latinos. And then just recently, I think maybe a couple of days ago, you had the Center for Immigration Studies, which is a conservative think tank, saying that the Republican Party should just focus on whites to try to win elections. I mean, so you have these very vocal proponents of this notion that Republicans can just forget about Hispanics.
Yeah, I guess what I should have said, there's no single Latino vote.
Right.
You can't just say, do this, right, and a Latino or Latina will vote this way.
Right, that's true. And so, and because of that, right, you would think that both parties have a natural interest in pursuing voters from this subgroup. I mean, when you look at, for example, the difference between the support that George Bush got in 2004, which is estimated to be at around 44% of Latinos or Latino voters, and compare it to the 27% that Mitt Romney got. I mean, that is a chasm. And so the calculus that Republicans or some Republicans are making is that it's just not worth it to try to go for the Latino vote because the percentage that you would need to attract to actually influence electoral outcomes is, in their view, prohibitive. But that's barely true in the short term, and it's patently false in the long term, right? Because what they should be thinking about is having this be a sort of investment in the future of the Republican Party among Latino voters. I think Pew Center is saying that Latino voters are expected to double in the next couple of decades, by which point, if the Republican Party has just accepted that they are not going to be a party that represents Latinos in any meaningful way, right, electoral victories may be beyond their capacity. And so it's just very wrongheaded, right, to think of Latinos as monolithic, saying they will always be Democrats or they will always be liberals. There's room for both parties to play.
Yeah, can you in a poll try to find out how important an issue is for someone? Because someone may feel one way about immigration reform, but they may feel a different way about abortion or same-sex marriage, and trying to weigh which of those might or might not be a litmus test for
right.
a candidate's vote.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. There's a lot of research that shows that Latinos have this duality when it comes to ideology, right? They will be social conservatives. So they're very much about, limitations on abortion rights, not necessarily pro gay rights or same-sex marriage, but they're also, in a sense, fiscal liberals. They're okay with big government, right? Whereas most Americans would not be. They're okay with big government trying to do big things, trying to help out the poor, trying to help out the needy, the disabled. And so because of this duality, right, you will always have either party being able to make inroads with right. that community.
Does a good poll, when it comes back, does it give you even more questions than it does answers? Because you can burrow into the numbers and start to go, oh, I wonder why, or I wonder if.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. That when you look at, for example, any respondent saying that moral issues are or a big consideration for them in a particular election cycle, you do wonder what that's a function of. Was it the way candidates presented their campaigns? Was it because there were no other overriding concerns, such as the economy or national security, to discuss? And yeah, I mean, a good poll will always make you want to know a little bit more about the population, the campaign, and it's for any number of reasons, right, including predicting what's going to happen next time around.
I mentioned that 52% of the survey's overall respondents saying they'd prefer tougher immigration laws. Even that is, okay, so what's tougher? My idea of tougher might not be your idea of tougher.
Right. And so that is one of those imperfections of survey research, right? We don't know exactly what people are thinking when they answer some questions.
I guess it does indicate a level of frustration at the current system.
Right, right. And so we don't want to say, for example, that just because somebody is opposed to tougher immigration laws that means that they outright favor or don't favor something like amnesty, right? I mean, we can't get too specific with what we're talking about. But yeah, it's just more of a general predisposition where if the framing around reform, for example, by Democrats is that it's just too punitive, right? Mm-hmm. Then it goes under that rubric for people of just being tougher or too tough, and they can raise opposition to it. Same thing in the opposite direction, right? If it's perceived to be too lax for any number of reasons, right? Whatever those specifics might be, then you might have opposition from conservatives who really view immigration as a problem and who want something done about it.
What is it like for you after any poll is out and the initial reports is released, and then whether it's a 24-hour cable news pundit or someone, they take your months of work, your hard research, your scientific approach, and then they boil it down sometimes to a paragraph or, you know, a talking point or two.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that academics in general would probably tend to fear.
Sure, scientific medical reports get the same sort of treatment.
Sure, yeah. And I mean, a lot of times too, we certainly want the attention. We want the research recognized. We want it disseminated. We want people to be familiar with it. And so it's mostly all to the good, right, mm-hmm. that the media, any media would pay attention to the report. It's a great thing. I think most of the time the misunderstandings are good faith misunderstandings. Like an academic will say something in a very measured, dispassionate way, just kind of say, like, look, we found this very interesting relationship, but we don't know exactly what it's due to. But of course, if somebody thinks it's so interesting, they kind of express it in very deterministic terms or just they word it more strongly. And so it becomes the perception becomes that, you know, this researcher said that X causes Y. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, no, I said nothing of the kind. I said the two were related and who knows why, you know. So it's always good faith misunderstandings, I think. It's just trying to make the research sound more, as it were, sexy than it is.
I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but the goal here is for education, right?
Sure.
That's the initial.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of us in the Blair Center hope that it's not just an educational tool for, you know, the students who take courses related to the South and to race and ethnicity and politics, but that it also be a tool for policymakers, perhaps. I mean, this is just one report. There will be others forthcoming on a whole host of different issues.
Raphael, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums recently spoke with Raphael Gimeno, Diane Blair Professor of Latino Studies at the University of Arkansas. For more information on this and other polls and reports, visit blaircenter.uark.edu.
On the next Fresh Air, an untold story from World War II. Thousands of American soldiers deserted the front lines. Journalist Charles Glass says most served bravely in combat before leaving their units.
Those soldiers who fought continuously and were never rotated out of the front lines simply were under so much pressure for so long that they cracked.
Glass's book is The Deserters. Join us.
Fresh Air, beginning this evening at 6 here on KUAF. Today, professional women's golf returns to Northwest Arkansas. And this year, organizers are hoping for some loud crowd participation on the 17th hole. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
If you watched the U.S. Open this weekend, you may have noticed that golf is a fairly quiet sport.
All right. That moves him to 6 over par.
Save for some chirping birds in the distance, a polite clapping of the crowd during the completion of a hole, and the comments from announcers if you're watching a golf tournament on television. Golf is a traditionally quiet game, but that idea is about to be challenged this week. The Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G, begins today at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers, and organizers are encouraging spectators to turn the 17th hole into the loudest hole in golf. Jay Allen has been the tournament chairman for all 7 years of the Rogers-based LPGA competition. Allen says this exercise in crowd participation has been a long time coming.
It's been building, and there's another tournament that we got the idea for this where they created literally a stadium around a par three, a short hole, and kind of all the typical rules of golf go out the window, you know, where people are loud, they boo bad shots, they cheer for birdies. And in this case here in Arkansas, when Stacey Lewis, the former University of Arkansas player and now one of the top players in the world, when she comes up to the green there, the hog calls are done, and the hole now actually has a reputation on the LPGA Tour, a good one, that it's just a kind of a fun, rowdy place. And we've been adding to that kind of stadium effect over the last few years. We tried it. It worked early, and then it added on the last few years. And now, as people will see, it really is ringed. The 17th green is ringed with seating. So, it both public seating and special seating for sponsors. So it should be a good time. We also, with the LPGA's help, shorten the hole. It is a par three, but it's a shorter hole now. So there should be more birdies, and who knows, maybe a hole in one or two.
By reducing the length of the hole from 185 yards to 145 yards, it gives fans the opportunity to see more birdies than in previous years, and that will offer spectators more chances to cheer. Allen also says because the 17th hole is one hole before the final hole of the course, it seemed like the best venue for creating a loud cheering section.
I just think it's so unusual for something like this to happen at a golf tournament. Again, we're kind of the normal rules of being real quiet and all those things go out the window. And I think people like to have fun. It's probably more like a Razorback game than any of the other holes on the course. And people just like to cheer and make noise. So it's clearly grown in popularity these last few years as we built it.
All structures on the 17th hole, including the Walmart tent, Malibu party deck, and the ballpark fan pavilion, have been redesigned to create a more stadium feel around the green. Because it's against the traditional golf etiquette of being quiet, one would think there may be some competitors who will not enjoy the cheers as much as Stacey Lewis, a former Razorback who has received much support from the crowd.
I'm sure that there's a few that may not like it, although we've never heard that. But I see it as the other way around, and the feedback from players is they just like the fact that there are people out there, first of all, and a crowd out there. And they like the fact that people are getting into their sport, the LPGA. So I think for the most part, the players really, really like it because it's good for the tour to have interest like that.
The Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G, begins today at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. Practice rounds are today and tomorrow, and the public can watch them for free. The Pro-Am, the event that allows sponsors to play with pros, is scheduled for Wednesday and Thursday, and that too is free and open to the public. The 54-hole tournament runs Friday through Sunday, and admission is $30 for a weekend pass or $15 for a day pass. Children 17 and younger can attend for free when accompanied by a ticketed adult. More information is available at nwachampionship.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
She was the sweetest little woman that your men most ever saw.
Beyond Arkansas's disproportionate number of musicians relative to its population, there are also plenty of songs mentioning the natural state, its people, and cities. Heard here is Booker White with Pine Bluff, Arkansas, recorded in 1937. During this period, White often recorded with Walnut Ridge native Washboard Sam, and White had developed his near-drone style of blues heard on classics like Parchment Farm. Unfortunately, neither are evident here, but Pine Bluff, Arkansas is still a great blues man's homage to an important Delta town.
My baby, she called me. She called me up on the phone. Well, she called me. She called me up on the phone. She said, Daddy, Daddy, I don't shine, come on, hurry up.
If in Jefferson County paying musical tribute to County Seat Pine Bluff, you'd be remiss not to mention Cedell Davis. The longtime Pine Bluff resident was born in Phillips County. Davis's observations about his adopted hometown gave him his most notable song, If You Like Fat Women. The song was originally recorded by Little Rock native Robert Palmer for Davis's 1993 release, Feel Like Doing Something Wrong. This version is from 1998's album, The Horror of It All.
I had to have a help. She fell across me. She like to match me to death now. If you like flat women, come on down to Pine Bluff, Arkansas. You know, old flat women down there in any place I ever saw.
Nods to Pine Bluff, Arkansas and blues songs make sense. More enigmatic is Tony Joe White's 1971 song concerning what sounds like a supernatural event further south in Chico County. They caught the devil and put him in jail in Eudora, Arkansas. The long-titled song seems to tell the literal story of its name. They caught the devil and put him in jail in Eudora, Arkansas has at least a couple of other Arkansas connections. West Memphis native Wayne Jackson plays trumpet, and Blytheville native Mike Utley plays organ and piano. White has other songs mentioning Arkansas, including Backwoods Preacher. Very nearly an Arkansas native himself, revered songwriter Tony Joe White was born in Oak Grove, Louisiana. Actually, very close to Eudora, Arkansas.
Now the tailor had been a poor man, but now his pockets were stuffed with money.
was sitting outside in a brand new Continental Lincoln. With fender skirts on it. He would not say where he got the money. Was he a part of the devil's bargain? Set him free that night in Eudora, Arkansas. Now who's to say? Take me back to Little Rock, rock me. Take me back to Little Rock and hop me.
Speaking of revered songwriters, they don't come much more lauded than Johnny Mercer. He's the lyricist behind such songs as Hooray for Hollywood, Moon River, and Blues in the Night, among many others. You wouldn't think Mercer would bother recording other songs, but heard here is his version of Lucky Millinder's Take Me Back to Little Rock, Arkansas. Like Mercer, Millinder was a performer as well. In fact, Millinder recorded with Woodruff County native Rosetta Tharpe, and Millinder's band once featured Hot Springs native Henry Glover. No word on why Mercer was moved to record it, but Take Me Back to Little Rock does rhyme, something like a Johnny Mercer song would.
Back to Little Rock, rock me. Take me back to Little Rock and hop me.
Where the cows are all contented, eating hay that's been fermented.
So rock me in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Arkansas, back in Little Rock, Arkansas.
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 Take me back to Little Rock, Arkansas. All the gals are sweet and sunny, 'cause they're raised on milk and honey. So rock me in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Take me back to Little Rock, don't stop me. Take me back to Little Rock and drop me. Corn is always stronger, you're alive and kicking longer.
So crock me,
Jack,
back in Arkansas. Life is raw back in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Arkansas. Arkansas. People flock to Little Rock, Arkansas.
'Cause the nights are made for wooing, and the moon is your undoing.
So rock me in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Arkansas. Arkansas. Take me back to Little Rock, Arkansas.
There's a gal on every corner.
If they see you, you're a goner.
So rock me.
Please don't block me.
Oh, never knock Little Rock, Arkansas.
And they're all songs of Arkansas. From Little Rock, I'm Stephen Cook with Arkansongs.
Arkansongs is a production of FM 89 and Experiment Station Studios. For more information or to subscribe to the podcast, visit arkansongs.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas. The songs of summer bugs are becoming strong, and the lights of lightning bugs beginning to flicker in the evening twilight. One can hear the soft buzz of a mosquito and the loud buzzing of bees. Recently, I've been noticing large bees humming around my home. Upon further inspection, I noticed they were coming in and out of perfectly formed holes on the side of my primarily wooden house. Come to find out, they're carpenter bees. I invited our Ozarks at Large insect expert, Dr. Donald Steinkraus, entomologist at the University of Arkansas, into my studio to find out more. He began by telling me how the carpenter bee is different from, say, a honeybee.
They're a primitive bee. They are a bee. One thing I think your listeners might be interested in is, you know, all the bees are basically vegetarians, and also they're hairy. They're evolved supposedly from wasps, and wasps are carnivores. So all the bees live on pollen. That's their main protein source. And so these are true bees. The females go out and gather pollen and make a pollen ball, and she puts that in this wooden tunnel she makes. She chews a tunnel into softwoods, usually like pine or fir. And so she makes this tunnel, and she makes a ball of pollen. And it's a pretty big ball, probably about the size of a marble. And then she moistens that with nectar. Then she lays a very large egg on that pollen ball. And then she takes some more sawdust that she's chewed, and she makes a partition. And over the summer, she'll make a number of these pollen balls, lay her eggs on it, and those will eat, the larvae will eat the pollen ball and turn into a carpenter bee. So the big difference is they eat pollen and nectar like a honeybee.
So they're not eating the wood.
Not at all. Yeah. No, they don't eat wood like termites. Termites actually do eat wood, and termites digest the cellulose in their gut. But these bees are strictly just making a nesting site in the wood, sort of like a woodpecker does. The female has big mandibles, and she chews the soft wood and deposits it, and that's when you see that sawdust. And she chews her way in there and makes a tunnel. It's actually quite remarkable. The tunnel is perfectly round, and it's about the size of a dime, about a half inch in diameter. And there, if you see these round, perfectly round dime-shaped holes in the wood of your home, it's almost always a sign of a carpenter bee. There's no other insect that makes that type of hole.
They are perfect. It's about the size of maybe my pinky finger.
Yeah, maybe a little bit smaller than a half inch.
Yeah.
But it's pretty, it looks like someone's taken a really good drill and just drilled up in there, which is kind of remarkable in its own right, you know, that they are able to, you know, use those mandibles on her, you know, her mandibles and chew this wood and make this hole. I mean, it'd be like as if you could chew a hole the diameter of yourself that was then several body lengths of yours, because they usually bore straight up vertically. Is that what you see?
Mm-hmm. Yes, for the most part.
And then they go up an inch, and then they go horizontally with the grain for about 6 to 8 inches, sometimes 12 inches. And so in that tunnel, they raise their young. And they also, the young ones overwinter in there usually. So in the summertime, she's gathering pollen and putting it in that tunnel. And then laying her egg, making a partition, and she'll have like 6 or 8 eggs on these lumps of pollen. And then those will eat it, pupate, mature, and then they'll spend the winter in that tunnel. And the next year they'll come out and they'll mate and start the cycle over again.
So does the same female bee go back to the same spot to lay her eggs?
No, not usually. There's some variation in these life cycles, but usually the female that makes a nest the next year is... So like a female produced this summer will make the tunnel next year, but they will reuse old tunnels. So that's one really good reason to block up and plug the tunnels you have. If you're having a problem with them, are you having a problem?
Yes.
And how many tunnels do you think you have?
Probably like 20 in my carport.
Yeah.
And in my actual house, you know, I don't spend a lot of time walking the entire perimeter.
Mm-hmm.
But sitting on my back porch, there are at least you know, six. I've plugged at least six or seven holes.
How did you plug them?
With some wood putty.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, with some wood putty.
Yeah, hardwood dowels is a good way, and wood putty. Some people think you should kill the bees within the tunnel because they are in the tunnel.
Well, I have some spray too.
Yeah, that so that's
I've
a good idea.
Up in the tunnel.
Yeah, there are ways to control them. You know, Seven Dust works well, which is available at places like Walmart. You're supposed to just follow the labels. It's very important. But there's a number of chemicals that you can use to spray into the holes, and then you can. They suggest waiting 12 to 24 hours to let any of the bees which are still out to get back in and hopefully get poisoned and die, and then plug the hole at that point. Because if you don't plug it, they might come back. Other ones might take over that tunnel the next year.
Right.
I think one of the characteristics of these are sort of in the range of solitary bees. They're not really social, and one of the characteristics of these things is they can build up their numbers each year. Because let's say you start out with one tunnel this year. Just one female found your carport, made her tunnel, and she then produces, let's say, four females and two males, offspring. Then next year, those four females will emerge, they'll mate, and they'll each start a tunnel. So now you might have five tunnels because one of them might take over the old tunnel. And then the next year after that, you might have 20, and it can build up so that the population can build. So you may end up with, like, eventually hundreds of nests in your wood. And then the wood can get structurally damaged. And in terms of control, many people suggest painting the wood, like plugging the holes and having painted wood. And sometimes people have, I think they really like untreated 2x4s or 4x6s.
That's what they really like to eat. Or not
that's
eat,
what they like to make their nest in, yes. Untreated wood. And they don't really like, apparently, stains and things won't keep them out.
No.
But painting, a good paint will prevent some of it. But once they've gotten developed in there, you're likely to have to plug the holes and try to get rid of them. One of the things about them is that the males are very territorial. Oh, is this a male or a female?
I don't know.
Does it have a white spot on its face?
Kind of looks like it.
I hope. Because the males are, this is a male. If you look at his face, he's got a yellow spot on it. You want to hold him? You can hold him.
No.
I guarantee you he can't sting you.
I don't think I want to hold him.
Come on now. Okay. But anyway, he can't sting you. The difference between these things, they look a lot like bumblebees, don't they?
They do. They're really loud, too.
So if you see that yellow spot on the front of the face, the female doesn't have that.
They're not burrowing holes in the
side. No, they don't chew the holes into the wood like the female does. They're just there like this is true of honeybee males through the drones. They're just there to mate. And then... He's, like I say, he does this guarding behavior. But the other characteristic with these over bumblebees is bumblebees have a lot of hair on their abdomen, the third part of their body. And these are very smooth. This is the female. So there's the female. Right?
I told you they were loud.
She's very grumpy. Now, theoretically, she could sting me if I pick her up. I'm almost tempted to let her sting me just so I could see what it feels like. I've never actually known anybody who's been stung by a female carpenter bee.
Right.
I imagine it's a lot like getting stung by a honeybee, but so I'm kind of tempted to.
Well, let's not do it in my studio.
Yeah, I know.
Let's not. No,
okay.
No.
But
no.
Anyway, you can see that she gets grumpy if I bother. Oh. She's quite mad, but I don't blame her for being mad because
I don't either.
She's the mother. Right now, she's probably got a nest in some site near the university, and she wants to get back to her pollen balls and laying eggs, and she doesn't want to be confined like this. On the other hand, they do become pests. They are somewhat beneficial. They do pollinate to a certain extent. I don't think they're nearly as good pollinators as honeybees or bumblebees or other solitary bees, but they do carry pollen from one plant to another. But
she's a little bit bigger than the male, I think.
Definitely bigger. Well, that's actually a very characteristic of many
of all
insects.
Okay.
I guess one other thing about the carpenter bee is I was thinking about them a bit. I think that they're sort of a man-made problem, like a lot of our problems.
I was going to ask, are they doing this in trees?
Yes, they do.
In nature,
they go into tree branches, dead tree branches. Mm-hmm. And
does that go along with where you were going with it being
a
man-made?
Yeah. First of all, the whole group, this group is called, they're the this species here is Xylocopa virginica, and they tend to be very tropical and subtropical. Like, there's no carpenter bees supposedly in Canada, but there's lots in Mexico, and then there's a few in the continental U.S. So they're really sort of a tropical insect. So they people say that their range is expanding, that they're moving northward. I would think that's probably related to global change. You know, the temperature is warmer in summer, and so the semi-tropical insect is moving northward. Then people like you live out in the country. More and more people spread out into the countryside where these bees used to live in a forest. And then you make your carport out of untreated pine or fir. They just really like that soft wood, and you've made the perfect habitat for them to nest in. So I think some of these things are related to why there's so many of them now, is that we create a perfect habitat, the temperature warms up a bit, and so there's more of them than there were in the past. Anyway, she's quite a beautiful, interesting creature, and you know, you've sort of piqued my interest.
That was Dr. Donald Steinkraus, entomologist at the University of Arkansas. This is Ozarks at Large.
Facebook was once the gathering place for teens online.
I used to be on Facebook daily until my aunt friend requested me.
Now they use many different apps: Instagram, Kick, YouTube.
On Tumblr, you like put quotes. It's showing your life without showing your face.
Teens and their complex social media choices, later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered, beginning this afternoon at 3 o'clock here on KUAF. KUAF is supported by Arcom Printing, located on the hillside just east of the Township and College intersection in Fayetteville. Arcom Printing provides printing, copying, and digital output services. ArcomPrinting.com or 444-7711 for more information. If you have Alzheimer's disease or think you may have Alzheimer's disease, Health Initiatives Research is seeking participants to evaluate the effectiveness and safety of an oral study drug that may slow the progression of mild to moderate Alzheimer's disease. More information is available by calling 871-1771. Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Noted clarinet soloist and chamber musician Kimberly Cole Livano from the University of North Texas School of Music in Denton will be featured artist for the third annual Arkansas Clarinet Workshop, slated for June 19th through the 21st at the University of Arkansas Fort Smith Breedlove Auditorium. The Arkansas Clarinet Workshop presents clinics, master classes, and performances for junior high, high school, and college clarinet students, along with educators. For more information or to receive registration forms, call 479-788-7544 or visit arkansasclarinetworkshop.org. A listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and the Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas, this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Goshen. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Christina Thomas. Kyle Kellums is back after a few weeks off tomorrow, along with Antoinette Grajeda, for an all-new daily edition of Ozarks at Large. Until then, thank you so much for listening, and have a good Monday.